welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today. Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at readymaderesources.com. Today's guest is Bob Griswold of Ready-Made Resources. Bob's been in the preparedness industry for over 18 years, so he knows a thing or two about being ready. Bob, welcome back to the show.
It's always good to be back. I enjoy the Prepper Recon, and I got a lot of good feedback last time I was on, so pleasure to be here.
All right, fantastic. Now, there's no shortage of news headlines that make us recognize the need to be prepared, not the least of which is the markets. 2016 is off to a horrible start. Would you agree?
Well, it's only a matter of time, as Margaret Thatcher said, that, you know, think about socialism is you eventually run out of other people's money. We don't even know how deep in debt America really is. There's a admitted amount of like $18-19 trillion, but when you add dividends that payments to individuals, when you add unforeseen things that we lend money to other countries, which we did to Europe during the 2008 crisis of $18 trillion or $19 trillion, I forget what it was, we really don't know how deep in debt we really are. It's we've had other people spending money. They've not told us what the credit card bills are, and they are coming due. You cannot, again, spend other people's money forever. It eventually comes due. You add on top of that the fact that, you know, we see a complete moral breakdown in the United States. You know, I hear people talk all the time, well, Donald Trump can do this, or this guy can do that. You know, unless we as a nation have moral repentance, unless we come to grips with our national sin, it doesn't matter who comes to power. We are going to have a hard, hard landing. We're seeing the beginnings of that now. The Bible makes it clear that we see it comes as birth pangs. And I think we are approaching the end of the age. But even if we're not, we're going to see this come in waves of birth pangs where you see a certain set of events happen. It might let off a bit. And that's not the time to let your guard down. Jesus said it would come that way. I mean, no woman who starts her labor pains thinks, wow, that labor pain went away, now I can go home, because another one's going to come right behind it. So we don't want to take a lull or a perceived lull as a time to let our guard down and say everything's fine, that something didn't happen that we thought might have happened. The next wave that comes is going to be more formidable than the previous wave, and it is going to build and build and build until I think the second advent or something very, very serious happens. I mean, very serious, something we have not experienced in this country in 150-some years since the Civil War, and I personally think it'll be more devastating than the Civil War.
And there's been several articles out lately about the crashing Baltic Dry Index. Zero Hedge had an article last week, and it linked to a couple of different sources that tracks shipping containers on ships around the world. And for a couple of days last week, there was like literally no ships on the ocean. What do you think that means going forward? And do you think that there's a greater risk to that let's say these shipping companies start going out of business, and then there's nobody to move the goods, and we don't have any manufacturing in America, and there's so many things that we just would not be able to produce. Could that trigger supply shortages?
Well, what you really want to look at when you look at the Baltic Dry Index, and this is, I was talking to somebody, you want to look at the contracts written, because sometimes the ships at sea, you don't see the transponder, so there might be ships out there, but you don't see the transponder, so that you might not see the actual ship. You see them when they're in port. But what you want to look at is the contracts, and the contracts have collapsed. So that tells you that there has been a dramatic drop in the amount of people that are shipping goods internationally. So there's less exchange of money. They call it the velocity of money. How often does that dollar switch hands? Well, it is slowing down. We see right now major banks are going to face a collapse of mortgage payments or loans, when this oil keeps dropping the way it is, people aren't going to be able to pay back a huge amount of oil loans that people have invested in. You can see a lot of wealth destruction in the oil industry. So just that alone is a very precarious situation we face. Yes, I mean, we are going to face some very, very dire financial times, and I don't think, even in the Civil War of America, we've faced the situation that is coming our way. We are broke in every way a nation can be broke. In fact, I'd like to say this. If we had experienced, and this is, I want to put it in perspective, because I think the moral is far more important than the tangible. We have experienced a moral collapse in the United States, which if we had experienced the same magnitude of collapse in the financial market, our dollars would be worth more. I mean, monopoly money would be worth more than our dollars. We just think of how our nation has collapsed morally, what we tolerate. You know, I was reading that Bible verse that's in Revelation 21:8. It says, but the cowardly, the sorcerer, the sexual pervert, everything, all these other things. But you notice the first one is cowardly. And, you know, if you're a coward and you're afraid to speak the truth or afraid to stand up for the truth, all those other things, you're going to be afraid to speak on them. You're going to be afraid to speak on the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of life. You're going to be afraid to speak on the sorcery we see actually coming into our houses every night through the TV set. All these things. So we have a nation of the clergy that has been basically cowardly. They've not stood up for the truth. And as a result, we as a nation have collapsed so far morally. I just can't believe it at times. What we tolerate, what we accept, what we believe, what we even endorse is just a magnitude. It's just hard to grasp. I mean, and then on top of it, we have an invasion of a force of a religious force that has been for 1,400 years. I know I hear everybody say there's a good Muslim out there, and I'm sure there are. But for 1,400 years, they have a track record of torture, rape, conquest, murder, sex slavery, you know, multiple marriage. I could go on and on and on, beheading. And we have that invading our country. And so, you know, I just say as a word of warning, get ready. I mean, if you think you have enough, I would really go back in and double down and look and see. I mean, I was talking the other night on another program about people who bought food supplies, but then they go and I say, let's go and count your protein. And the protein count is way, way off. Keep in mind, to maintain muscle mass, to build muscle, you have to put protein in your body. And a lot of these packages or a lot of things people buy are just, you know, a high sugar content, high carbohydrate content. That's not going to cut it when you need it. It will not do it. And so I tell people to go in and, you know, buy, you know, either freeze-dried meats or even the Reuters meats and have that ready to put into your food supply, because you can add meat to anything. You can add meat to rice. You can add meat to beans. You can add it to pasta. So it's a great expander of meals. And with the technology we have today of adding, freeze drying or preserving these types of foods for long periods of time, so you can use them. You know, their expiration dates are 25 years in the future. You know, we really need to start looking at things like that. Really plan as if this is going to happen, because it is. It is going to happen. If you see over and over and over again, you look at people in the mainstream. Look at Ted Koppel. Now, he's a liberal Democrat, but he wrote that book, Lights Out. He has bought enough food for him, his children, and his grandchildren. I listened to him say this for a year because he believes it's going to happen, that we're going to have a grid-down situation where someone's going to hack our grid and turn off major parts of the United States, which it could take a year, year and a half to get back up and running again. Now, that's Ted Koppel. That's not, you know, somebody wearing a tinfoil hat. That's mainstream as it gets.
And tied to the Baltic Dry Index and shipping, Walmart closures are supposed to be about 269 stores that they're going to be closing.
Yeah, but McDonald's is closing, I think, 1,000 stores or something. I read it the other day. Let's just say a large number of stores. People are realizing that what they have spent their money on in the past, the way they've spent their money, they're going to have to become far more responsible with how they spend their money, and then to look at things that can preserve you in a time of crisis. If there's a protracted time of crisis, do you want to be in a government food line getting whatever they give you under the conditions they give it to you? And you will do the conditions. I mean, people don't realize we haven't seen it in this country, as I was explaining before the show, that I have traveled the world extensively. I've been throughout the Middle East, North Africa, Asia, been all over Europe, and I've seen what the other side of the world is like. And when people get desperate, I've seen everything. You'll see them do anything for food. I mean it, anything. And so take that for what it means. I always ask the question, and Mark, I'm a Christian, so I just try to be delicate as I can with it. Mother, father, your children are hungry. Mother, what would you do to feed them? That's a difficult question to ask. It's a difficult question to face. But I can tell you there are millions of mothers right now on this planet that are facing that very issue, and they sell what they have to sell to feed their children. Very, very sad.
Yeah, it is. And then in addition to the 269 Walmart stores that are closing, there's going to be layoffs of, I think, 1,600 employees. And after the State of the Union address, I thought, well, you know, maybe that's because the economy is so good that people don't have to go to Walmart anymore, because it is kind of a painful experience sometimes. And I thought, well, maybe they're going to Macy's instead. But they're closing stores as well. I think they're closing 40 locations, and I think that the ones that are staying open are going to have massive, massive cuts. I think they're laying off 5,000 employees.
Yeah, and see, this that directly affects the velocity of money, because you have to keep in mind that that Walmart employee gets his $250. He goes out and buys gas, so the that keeps the gas station in business. He goes out and buys food. That keeps the grocery store in business. He goes out and buys whatever else he buys. So that money then transfers hands, and with most of America transfers hands, that the $250 is going to go fairly quickly because they're on a very, very tight budget, so every bit of that dollar is allocated. And then the people that got that money won't have it to spend, so that the suppliers for those, the gas, the suppliers for whatever else they're buying, you know, they have to cut inventory because they're not selling as much wholesale, and that ripples throughout the economy, and what it affects is called the velocity of money. The velocity of money slows down dramatically, and we've already seen a dramatic slowdown in the velocity of money. So America, the world, and America and the world are on the precipice of what I would believe is a cataclysm unlike the modern world has seen. And you throw on top of it some kind of disaster where, you know, somebody starts toying with the grid and turns power off for a while, or, you know, the EBT cards don't work because somebody has done that. And believe me, those software bombs are already built into, they've been put into our software infrastructure in this country. And that was according to Ted Koppel. They're there. All somebody has to do is activate them. And then all of a sudden, you got, you know, 10 million people trying to use their EBT card and it doesn't work. Explain to me what happens next after that event happens.
Well, I guess it's just absolute chaos.
Pandemonium breaks out very quickly. It's time to get ready. We live in a dangerous world. We see more and more violence. Going back to the days of Noah, the one thing that God specifically says that he judged the world for in the days of Noah, we always think of sexual immorality or whatever, but it was for violence. Now, violence is manifested in many forms. You have violence against, you know, families. You have violence against women. You have violence against each other. You have war violence. You have violence, violence, violence. And if you look at the world today—
And violence, I mean, against the unborn.
Violence against the unborn. Violence against marriage. Think of that. The violence we have against the sanctity of marriage. We are acting violently towards it. We say the pattern that God set up is no good, and we are going to violate it. So we see this. So what can we expect? I mean, we can only expect judgment. I pray God's merciful hand gives us more time. I don't know. Nobody thought on September 11th, 2001, that the next day we would have a cataclysmic change in the way the world looks at security. When one of these massive events happens, you don't know. It could be tomorrow. It could be a year. We don't know. But when it does happen, all of a sudden, if Mountain House sells out because of a good sale during the Shemitah, the blood moons, of a perceived thing, imagine what it's going to do when something really does happen. You won't get any food. You won't get any long-term food. It'll be gone. I mean, they sold out in 2 weeks, for the next three months, it became very, very difficult to get Mountain House from the distributor. Mountain House admitted we sold everything. The time to prepare is when it's good. It's like people with precious metals or something. I mean, the precious metals prices are super depressed. I'm not a precious metals dealer, so don't have a dog in that race. But to me, it seems like the time to take your paper money that has every piece of paper money that has ever existed has eventually lost all of its value, and put it into something that right now, if I had a gold coin on me, I could go to Pakistan, and you know what I could do? I could pretty much do what I need to do. I could buy what I need to buy, because that is a form of currency that the world will recognize anywhere you go. Pretty much anywhere you go, that would become a form of currency. So we really need to evaluate what we have as far as the paper and money we have, and convert it into things that will have meaning and value when and if this economy does collapse. And I say when and if. I do believe it's when. Because again, you eventually run out of other people's money. You can't print and print and print and print into infinity and not have a major financial collapse. It has never happened in the history of the world. Every pattern that has ever happened that will, in the way we're doing it, ends up in a collapse. So that's, I learned from history.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. KD Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. These plates can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON to get 10% off your entire order at KDArmor.com. That's CATIArmor.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
You're talking about the shortages that were happening around Shemitah. I did use that period of time to sort of set for myself and my family a minimum level of preparedness, and we did a lot of things to try to get ready during that period. But talk to us about what was the industry like? How far back ordered was Mountain House and some of the other big dealers? Because you've been in it and you've seen the highs and the lows of this market. And I think that there's so many people that have this mindset that when they see the crack in the veneer, that's when they're going to go out and that's when they're going to stock up. And there's not really a need to until they see that catalyst. How realistic is that? I mean, I remember back when after the tsunami and Fukushima started melting down, that's when I decided to buy some iodine tablets. And I think we waited about 3 months for those. And, I think we already had gas masks, but, that was another thing that you could not buy iodine tablets and gas masks after Fukushima for a good 6 months. What was the rest of the industry like during the Shemitah?
Segue here for a second. You mentioned something, a protective mask. Think about it. If you have one of these major shutdowns, we have a lot of people that are very unhappy because they couldn't use their EBT or whatever, the water was turned off. And keep in mind, those are all computer controlled. All of our services are computer controlled, so anybody could hack it and turn it off. You're going to have police and military using dispersal agents to just break up crowds. So if you live in a big city, you mentioned protective mask, I would strongly recommend getting one, because if dispersal agents are starting to use, they drift. And if you're in their path, and you're, even if you're an innocent, it's like a bullet. If I shoot a bullet into a crowd, it doesn't care who it hits. Whoever it hits, it's going to hurt. And dispersal agents are the same way. Once it's shot into a crowd, that stuff can drift, and it can become very, very irritating. So if you live in a metropolitan area, plan on being in a metropolitan area, I would have a protective mask, because they will quickly go, you will not get it. You will not get it, just like after Fukushima. Not only did iodine go out, but protective masks were gone. I mean, they were gone. And everything else according the same way. And same thing with the threat of Ebola coming to America. Ammonium chloride, which is a disinfectant. You had level protective suits, Tyvek suits. You couldn't get them. They were gone. I mean, they were gone. Hospitals were buying them up by the millions. So you could not get them. And the government will always be the first in line to grab those things. And so, you know, you'll be way, way down on the totem pole. You just won't get it. Same with Mountain House. We had a very difficult time during that because Mountain House didn't inform us they were running low. And after the sale, all of a sudden it was like, hey, folks, we're 3 months behind with no inventory whatsoever. And I mean, none whatsoever. And it was like, you know, not only us, but we had a lot of people going, I bought this and I'm not getting it. Where's my stuff? And I'm saying, call Mountain House. I mean, we did not know. We were not selling stuff we didn't know we didn't have. It was just, they just ran out and they were gone. Well, in a real crisis, it'll just go offline because I'll realize it won't be 3 months out. It'll be a year, year and a half out. And at that point, that's academic. You won't get it. You won't get it in time. If, you know, money would devaluate enough. There'd just be a dozen circumstances that prevent you from getting it. So now is the time. Now is the time to review what you have. Another thing people often forget about food supplies is the fact that we sit down at a desk and work. Now, unless you're a construction worker swinging a hammer, carrying plywood, you know, something of that nature, you know, somebody out doing hard labor, you don't know what it means all of a sudden to go from a 2,000-calorie-a-day diet to a 4,000-calorie-a-day diet. My wife and myself and my son, we do 18th century reenacting in Fort Loudoun, Tennessee, and we go there and you start to realize what it was like to live in the 18th century where everything was physical labor. You might have had a horse if you're lucky, but everything was physical labor, splitting wood, cutting wood you had to do. You had, you know, everything was manual, and your caloric intake can go from 2,000 calories to 4,000 calories very, very quickly. And again, protein will be the thing that you absolutely need. And I hate to say this, but I know just from being in this business long enough that most people's protein in their food supply is dramatically low. I will make a plug right now. As of today, the 19th of January, we do have the Mountain House food on sale. It's 25% off. And, you know, they do have the meats. We have freeze-dried meats, so you can get that if you want to. And Whirlings and Yodis make a wet-packed meat. Very good stuff. It's all Amish, non-GMO food. But just some of the things you need to be thinking about because, as you pointed out, when you need it, you will not get it.
And sales are, that's the best time to stock up on stuff is when you can catch stuff on sale. And a lot of times the best time to get sales is when nobody else is really looking for stuff. You mentioned gold and silver earlier. You know, it's kind of really fallen out of favor and this might really, really be the time to stock up on that as well. Even the mainstream banksters are now calling for economic chaos. I think it was RBS. I think they said sell everything. Deutsche Bank said to prepare for the perfect economic storm. And UBS is calling for a 30% bear market. And UBS is also calling for $3,300 gold. So, it's like
sales
you said.
Sales are always good because you expand your – excuse me. Go ahead.
Yeah, you just catch it when nobody else wants it. That's the best time to buy stuff. Because when everybody wants it, you're gonna pay double or triple.
If you get it. See, again, this is the thing we don't realize. And fortunately, for some reason, I had friends that got me into some security during the height of all the war and everything. And I was fortunate to be able to travel. And it's not like you pay more. It's like you can't get it. Now, as Americans, we think, well, we can always get it. Well, possibly. But what do you get to sell for it? If they don't want money because your money's not value, or you don't have enough of it, which you could quickly find yourself paying a tremendous amount of, you know, paper money, or gold or things. What would you have that you would sell if it's even available? During the Great Depression, I mean, we don't realize between 2 and 7 million people in the United States during the Great Depression died of starvation. I mean, they just could not get the food, and they died from starvation. They sick, you know, as their body didn't get enough food, it started breaking down, became more susceptible to disease and everything else, and they died. So it's not just the fact that you'll pay more; it's if you can get it.
And in the Great Depression, you had 90% of the population living in rural areas where they could produce their own food. Now it's 90% of the population is in a metropolis of some sort, and there's absolutely no way they can produce their own food.
You know, FEMA went out and bought, I think, 2 million MREs for New York for a crisis. This is what Ted Koppel says in his book, Lights Out. 2 million MREs for 8 million people. Do the math. You know, it's less than a day's worth of food for a meal for 8 million people. I mean, it just there's not enough there. And so when that, once push comes to shove and it starts breaking down, do you want to be out fighting for what scraps are left over, or do you want to have a plan where you can, you know, ride out part of the storm, have a plan maybe to evacuate, a lot of different things that you can do if you plan ahead. If you fail to plan, you, as they say, you plan to fail. So, you know, now is the time. Again, as a Christian person, I go back to the fact, you know, what is more important in the economy of God? Is it morality or is it finance? So the question I ask is, if God's going to judge us on our morality and finance is just a result of the moral collapse, I mean, it's immoral to spend money that you don't have, immoral to spend your children's money, your grandchildren's money, grandchildren's money, which we've done. So it's a moral issue. So as we see our nation collapse morally more and more and more to where we see on TV, on just in the mainstream news media what is portrayed, you know, we have our families are broken, just so many things that we see that where it's God says to do something differently. What's he gonna, is he just gonna sit up there and say, okay, well, they're having a bad day, we'll let them have a break here for a while and just let them go do their thing? Or is he going to sit there like he has done historically and brought judgment? And judgment usually hits the food supply. It usually hits your borders. You're invaded. It usually, you know, your finances are destroyed. And so if we learn from history, I think that's the best way we have to learn. If we learn from history, I would say with 100% mathematical certainty that our borders will be completely violated, and I think we're pretty close there now. Our money, what we consider money, will be completely destroyed, which we're seeing that happen now. And then our borders are being destroyed. We're being invaded. The invasion of a force that for 1,400 years has destroyed and conquered and raped its way across history.
And on that subject, of course, we've seen what happened in California, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing more of that type of event with the way that we treat our borders. They're just so porous, and it's almost as if there's an invitation given to come in. And we've seen how that's worked out for France and for Germany, and how it's working out for Sweden with the rape rate and the violence and all of that. Can you talk to us a little bit about personal security, as it's obvious that our government's not going to do anything about this? So this is obviously something that we're going to have to take upon ourselves to get prepared, to take care of ourselves personally from a security standpoint.
Yeah. And I would also point out, keep in mind, and you can historically fact check this, that America's first war, the first war we fought as a country, was fighting the Barbary pirates, the Muslims, that were kidnapping our sailors, stealing the goods inside of them, enslaving them. And, you know, finally we had to send a fleet down there to destroy them. And it worked for a while. But if you read the book that I think Brian Kilmeade just put out about the Barbary Wars, when they were, you know, there's actually quotes from when they were negotiating, trying to negotiate peace, a ransom to get our sailors back. The Sultan said, "This is our religion. This is what we are commanded to do to the infidel." So it was there was no conflict in it. There was no moral ambiguity or moral crisis and kidnapping, raping, and enslaving people, according to his own words. And again, so anybody who thinks that, you know, they know a nice Muslim, and I'm not saying he's not a nice Muslim, but if you look at the historical context of 1,400 years, hang on to your hats, folks. It's going to get really, really lively. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I have traveled the world extensively where I've had to learn, had some good teachers, teaching situational awareness. And what do you do in certain things? The biggest thing, there's some simple rules you can follow. First of all, I've done this with my wife. Know your environment. Know what's around you. And people think that's really easy to do. It takes a real conscious effort to keep up with the moving thing of, as you move through the day, keeping a situational awareness of what's on your 360. You know, everything around you, as they say, watch your six. Being able to do that, it takes a lot of effort. One of the things that was shown me or taught to me is that if you go out and get a movie, just a standard old movie, get a James Bond movie if you want to, but you could get, you know, a love story if you want to. It doesn't matter. For the next hour and a half as you watch that movie, don't pay attention to the middle of the screen. You know, if it's a love story, don't pay attention to the good-looking guy kissing the good-looking girl. If it's a violent movie, don't watch, you know, pay attention to Bruce Lee beating somebody up. Pay attention to the background. Very, very difficult to do because your eye wants to catch what is there in front of you. That's what it's designed to do. Your eyes, that is designed to make you watch the girl and guy kissing or the fight or whatever. And if you start to look at the background, look at things in the movie like, are there shadows? Well, shadows can tell you what time of day it is. What kind of stores, colors, cars, people, male, female. You know, start paying attention to all those things in the background. I watch a lot of older movies, and I like all the antiques in them. What kind of things do they have? So, and then after an hour and a half of that, you're going to find yourself exhausted. Then have somebody start quizzing you about what you paid attention to and could see. Because again, this is how things like this happen. A frontal assault is the most costly for the assaulter. The person who comes right up to you in your face, that's generally not the way it is. It's usually a flanking thing. They come in. That's what this guy did. He built trust. He built that so he could emotionally flank these people when he went in there and just shoot them. They weren't expecting it. We know this guy. So the thing is to pay attention to what you're not supposed to be paying attention to. Watch the flanks. Watch the things off in the background, because that's generally where the signs are given that something is going wrong. So as you watch that movie, try that one time. I strongly recommend it. You'll find yourself exhausted mentally, and you'll see that it's more than just thinking you're walking and paying attention. There's a lot of things going on. The environment's always dynamic. Keep your head on a swivel. You look around. In a fight or flight thing, when you feel the danger, the body goes into a survival mode to where your vision narrows dramatically. That's why law enforcement and people are taught to swivel their head. That's why snipers can be so effective, because you're just in a fight or flight. You're looking straight ahead. You've got tunnel vision. They're up above you. Your head's not going up and down looking at the roof lines. And boom, it's very effective because it's the way we're physiologically made. So, and do that. Now, the other thing I'll address, if you are in an active shooter situation, the schools do it completely wrong. You mean bundle everybody up on a big X and let the guy come in and, you know, please don't shoot us. Well, he does shoot him because he doesn't care about their pleas. And so the school has it, so they put everybody in a big group where they can shoot them real easy because they're all bundled together, you know, shooting fish in a barrel type thing. That might sound crass, but that's exactly what they've done. There's far more effective ways of dealing with an active shooter. I mean, imagine if you had the biggest guys in the class put their butt up against the door. I mean, it's usually, if it's a school, it's going to be a concrete block wall for the door. The guy comes in the door, and from the flank, boom, they hit the guy. They might or might not do anything, but they're going to be far more effective than sitting in the room. So the rule is, get off the X. Don't stay on the X. Keep moving. Any of you shooters out there, anybody shoots regularly, you know, if you set paper targets up and get, you know, 50 feet away, it's easy to hit a paper target. Next time you do something, put a bottle on a string, throw it over a tree, and swing the bottle around and try to hit the bottle with the same gun, same distance. You will probably, 1 out of 20, if that, hit the bottle. A moving target is much, much harder to hit. Don't stay on the X. Get off the X. Movement saves your life. So, and the other thing is, when you're in a mall or a movie theater, something to that effect, always pay attention to where the exits are at. I was in Virginia Beach a couple weeks ago with my mother, and my sister's son and his wife, and they wanted to go down to a mall. And this was right before Christmas. So I was teaching my nephew something, and I said, "Now, Thomas, tell me where all the exits are at right now." And he says, "Well, he carries. He has a legal carry permit." And he goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, if something happened, how would you get out of this building real quick? How would you get out of this mall? And you got all these people around." And I said, "Here's an exit. I get three exits. There's one. Know your exits. Continually plan for your exits. You know, I have an active shooter situation with my son. I have a 13-year-old now. And we know if we go to a mall or something, first of all, if we go to a mall or a movie theater, we're going to go on off hours. People that are going to active shooter are going to want high body counts, so they're going to want to go at 7 o'clock in the evening, 6 o'clock in the evening, Friday night when you have lots of people down there. You know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, it's the geritol generation walking around the mall to keep active. Not as much publicity and, you know, body count in that. So go in off hours, but still know where the exits are at. But, you know, if Joshua and I, if we're at the mall and something does happen, he knows first thing, he knows where the exits are at, we're going to try to get out of the building. If we can't get out of the building, he knows to get away from me. Because if I'm carrying and for some reason I had to engage, which I don't want to, I will avoid it at all cost. If I had to engage an active shooter, I become a bullet magnet. So my son knows to get away from dad, leave, go. I'll find you later. But I don't want if I start shooting bullets one way, bullets are going to be coming back at me. I don't want him catching, you know, collateral damage. So we have planned this out ahead of time. What do we do in an active shooter situation? Get off the X, know where the exits are at, and plan for that. And again, keep situational awareness. We actually went to the movie the other night, 13 Hours, and two incidents happened right in the movie, right before it started getting dicey. This couple got up and walked out. They got up and walked out of the movie. Man, and my spider sense went off because I actually went and leaned forward to make sure they hadn't left something behind. I could easily see a movie like that where something could go wrong. So I leaned forward, looked at them. Some people probably wondered what I was doing, but I looked around to make sure something hadn't been left behind. Unfortunately, there wasn't. And then another situation developed. Somebody started talking at the movie, and there's two people started yelling at each other. Well, that has the potential to go south. So it's just being that situational awareness and being ready to deal with it should it happen. And again, in a movie theater, most movie theaters have exits in the back. If you're in a stadium seating, you know those exits, know where they're at, and get out of there if you can get out. And so those are just some of the things I tell people to do. You know, if I'm with people, don't be the hero. If there's, I mean, and I don't mean that if you see some woman being victimized, like in Germany, I would, you know, I could not live with myself if I didn't put my every ounce of breath and effort I had into stopping that attack. But if I'm out somewhere and, you know, there's some guys that just look bad, you don't have to walk past them. Go to the other side of the street. You know, that's what I mean by don't be a hero. You don't need to sit there, well, I'm a tough guy. I'm going to do this. I'm not going to yield the sidewalk to them. Hey, yield the sidewalk. Go to the other side. Get out of their way. If they follow you, then you got a different thing. But don't be the hero. Don't be the macho guy. Swallow your pride a little bit. You know, if they want to be bad, they want to be tough, let them be. You'll be alive. Best case, you pull a gun and shoot them because they do something bad. You've got legal consequences. You've got the police. You've got all that stuff you have to deal with. Don't deal with it. Get out of the way. Let them have their sidewalk. So those are just some of the things that you can do quickly. You know, learn to adapt. There is not one situation that's right for everything. I hear people, if you ever hear somebody say, if this happens, you got to do this. That's very, very seldom applies. I mean, there's general rules like get off the X, but even then, that might not be the rule. Be adaptable. Be ready to change. Think through the problem. You know, I forgot who it was. I think it was Colonel Grossman, the guy who wrote On Shooting, On Killing. He said, you know, he has a plan to kill everybody he meets. Now, he's not a homicidal maniac, but if he's in a grocery store line, he's not looking at the little old lady that's 84 years old. He's looking around seeing where the threat could be at. Again, that's that situational awareness that we mentioned, you know, be aware of that. And so I know where if I'm in a line, if something went south, maybe who's my friend or who would be my enemy. You know, whenever I get on an airplane, I sit there and scan the people getting on the airplane. And I have had my son with me a couple of times, and I said, Joshua, those guys are military. And he goes, how do you know? I said, just my guess. So I said, in a bad situation, they would probably be guys that would help. And so we just sit there and wait. And, you know, in the airlines, they always say, if you're in the military, active military, get on the plane first. Lo and behold, if more times than not, those are the guys that get on the plane. So, you know, I look around and evaluate the people that are there with me. And you'd be surprised how many times you can be accurate with that. And the inverse is true, that you can look around and say, that guy could be problems. So, you know, you'd want to deal with that.
That's the end of the first half of my conversation with Bob Griswold of Ready Made Resources. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.